Hello, sports fans. Good evening, and thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Sunny Young.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's begin with athletics. The All-Russian Athletics Federation has chosen not to contest sanction and will instead cooperate with the IAAF in hope of being reinstated for Rio 2016. Russia was fully suspended from World Athletics for accepting an indefinite ban from the sport. The All-Russian Athletics Federation chose not to contest such a sanction at what would have been a hearing into the matter next month. Russia has already been provisionally suspended by the International Association of Athletics Federations over a sport's worst drug scandal. Faced with a fully-fledged ban that would see Russian athletes kicked out of next year's World Indoor Championships, the Russian Federation decided to cooperate with the IAAF in the hope of regaining membership of the IAAF in time for the Olympics. The IAAF said in a statement issued during its council meeting in Monaco that the Russian Federation confirmed they understood that council would only accept their reinstatement as an IAAF member following the recommendation of the International Federation's inspection team, who will decide if the verification criteria have been fulfilled. The IAAF was expected to announce later today what Russia would have to do in order to regain membership, but the governing body has already confirmed the earliest it could do so would be after March's World Indoors in Portland. In another development, USA's Ashton Eaton and Ethiopia's Genzebe Dibaba were named the male and female IAAF World Athletes of the Year for 2015 on Thursday. Both athletes set world records during 2015, Eaton in decathlon and Dibaba in the 1500 meters, and won gold medals in these events at the IAAF World Championships Beijing 2015. For more on this, let's go to Daybreak Africa's Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Hello, Mark.
Ethiopian Genzebe Dibaba is the 2015 World Female Athlete of the Year. The IAAF revealed in Monaco on Thursday. Dibaba set a world indoor 5,000-meter record of 14 minutes and 18.86 seconds in Stockholm, Sweden. She went on to establish a new outdoor 1,500-meter world record of 3 minutes and 50.07 seconds in Monaco. Dibaba crowned the year with a gold medal in 1,500 meters at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Meanwhile, Ethiopia's Almaz Ayana was presented with the IAAF Golden Shoe Award presented by Adidas. The award is for the most outstanding performance at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, where she won the 5,000 meters in 14 minutes and 26.33 seconds ahead of Genzebe Dibaba. Still in Monaco, Kenya's Olympic and World Championship 3,000-meter steeplechase champion Ezekiel Kemboi is one of six newly appointed IAAF Athletes Commission members. The commission consists of 18 members, 12 elected by their peers and 6 appointed by the IAAF. Turning to football, Somalia challenge Rwanda before defending champions Kenya tackle Zanzibar at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association SECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Awassa, some 270 kilometers south of the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa today, Friday. Elsewhere, South Sudan engage guest side Malawi as Djibouti face Sudan in Bahir Dar, some 270 kilometers north of Addis Ababa. Tomorrow, Saturday, Uganda play Burundi as Tanzania mainland engage hosts Ethiopia in Awassa. Meanwhile, South Africa challenge hosts Senegal before Zambia face Tunisia in Group A action at the start of the Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations in the capital Dakar tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, attention shifts to Group B, where the showdown between perennial rivals Algeria and Egypt will give way to the encounter between Mali and Nigeria. In Tunisia, the curtains come down on the Orange African Confederations Cup when Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel hosts South Africa's Orlando Pirates in the return leg of the final on Sunday. They drew 1-1 in the first leg last week. Finally, the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championship gets underway in Luanda, Angola today, Friday. Angola's Interclub are defending champions.
Mark Ouma reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Thanks, Mark. In African athletics, one of our big stories this week was Haile Gebrselassie's competing in a symbolic farewell race in the 15th annual Great Ethiopian Run in Addis Ababa. VOA's Sunny Young filed this report.
The two-time Olympic champion, regarded as one of the greatest runners in history, was surrounded by well-wishers both before and after the popular 10-kilometer road race through the Ethiopian capital. Before the race, 42-year-old Haile Gebrselassie said it was a special moment to have a symbolic end to his record-breaking career on home soil.
Yeah, it is. It is, especially here in Ethiopia. It's going to be this one, the last one. A little bit, you know, just sad. I know, what can I do? It's just over 28 years running. This will be, you know, the last one here in Ethiopia.
Haile Gebrselassie finished the race in about 33 minutes. He says he could have gone faster, but he spent the early part of the race zigging and zagging through the huge crowd of runners. More than 40,000 people participated in the Great Ethiopian Run, which organizers describe as Africa's biggest road race. Haile crossed the line barefoot in honor of another two-time Olympic champion from Ethiopia, the late Abebe Bikila, who was most famous for winning a marathon gold medal in the 1960 Rome Olympics while running barefoot. After finishing, Haile gave some special thanks.
I would like to say thank you all the people who supporting me the last 28 years, especially my wife and the children and the people of Ethiopia and the whole.
Haile Gebrselassie is one of the founders of the Great Ethiopian Run. He fired the starter's pistol to get the runners going and then joined in with the masses to run. Ethiopian athletes Temirat Tola and Mamitu Daska won the men's and women's titles in Addis Ababa. Temirat clocked 28 minutes and 44 seconds, while Mamitu finished in 32 minutes and 16 seconds. Meanwhile, before the race, reporter Skinder Ferru caught up with Haile Gebrselassie's longtime Dutch manager.
Hello, I'm Jos Hermans. I'm based and I'm living in the Netherlands. I met Haile Gebrselassie when he was 17 years old in 1991 at the Yameda cross country. And since then, we worked together as a manager, coach, friend, and we will be friends forever.
Let me take you back to that Yameda event. What happened then?
It was a cross country in it was a selection race, and he became fifth in that race. He didn't win, but because of that selection race,
it was 10 kilometers.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, around 10k, because he was still junior. Can be also 8 kilometers. He was so he was then selected for the World Cross Champions Juniors 1 or 2 months later in Belgium in Antwerp. And he competed there. I'm quite sure he was number 7 then in the World Championships cross country in Antwerp, and then in 1992 he was second in the World Championships cross country in juniors in Boston. And anyway, since that date in February 1991, we worked together.
In Yameda, what were you doing at that time? Were you recruiting, you know, athletes? Tell me how you approached him first.
Ah, okay. No, I came already in 1982 for the first time to Ethiopia, and then I was scouting athletes for the Rotterdam Marathon. I was the organizer of Rotterdam Marathon, so I scouted.
Scouting Balena Densamo in that.
Yes, and Mekonnen and all the other athletes. And then I came more often to Ethiopia. And Ethiopia has a special place in my heart already from the days of Abebe Bikila. You know, when I saw the movies from the Olympics in 1960 and 64, I was a young boy, 10 years, 14 years, and you know. somebody from a very, very far away country, barefoot, winning the Olympics in Rome, and it was for me like an incredible story. And since then, I always liked to go to Ethiopia. And so in 1982, I came, and then I came more and more often, and I was many times every year at the Yameda for the cross country. And then in 1991, I saw Haile and a few other athletes, and I made contact with them and asked them if I could represent them, and that's how we started to work together.
Mm-hmm. So you represented him for how many years as his manager?
Yeah, from the beginning, 1991, today or this year's 24 years.
What is the most unforgettable moment in Haile's athletics life for you, especially?
Oh, there's too many unforgettable moments, fantastic moments of winning races, his first world record in the 5,000 meters in Hengelo in my country. Then another one, he broke the world record 5,000 meters in Zurich with 11 seconds, amazingly. It's nearly 1 second per lap. Of course, everybody talks about 2000 Olympics in Sydney where he won from Paul Thacker. The amazing thing about that performance is that he was injured already several months. He was not training completely. Actually, we had already an appointment in Finland to go to a doctor to have an operation for his tendon. He still decided to go to run for his country, and he was winning that race not only on his talents as a runner, but also especially on how strong his mind was. And another fantastic race for me was when he was breaking the world record in the marathon in 2:03:59.
Are you surprised that he decided to stop running at this time?
Yes and no. Yes, it's time because he gets older. It's more difficult. The body is not that young anymore. No, because he loves running. He will run forever. And it was always difficult to pin him down. We have to pin him down about saying goodbye many times. We talked already about it maybe 5 years ago, 7 years ago. And he could never say, you know, when do I want to stop? He highly chooses his own moments. And he has a few times, he has already said before, one time in New
like
York,
in New York, yeah.
One time in New York, and then this year again in Manchester. You know, that's spontaneous. It comes from himself. It was never discussed between him and myself. And now, you know, of course, it's fantastic if he can run in Addis Ababa for, you know, hundred thousands of people to watch him and enjoy and, you know, say farewell. But I'm sure many people here in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia will still see him running early morning in the woods outside Addis Ababa, so in that way he will never stop.
How many Ethiopian athletes do you represent now?
I don't count, but there's many. I mean, probably at least 50 or 60 Ethiopian athletes we are working with. It's not only me. We have a big office in Holland. We work with 30 people. We have a very good coaches. Ketana Tesema is one of our coaches here. Valentine Trau, he's one of the persons in our office who's also here now that works with many of the athletes. And we have a wonderful group of athletes, young athletes also. So it's hard work, but it's also a big pleasure.
That's Jos Hermans, the longtime Dutch manager of Ethiopian star Haile Gebrselassie. And Jos was talking with reporter Skinder Farou in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
We got the game on! This is for the world! Just go!
And in African football, my colleague Sunny Young caught up with our football guru, David Legge.
David, let's kick off in Tunisia's seaside city of Sousse. That's where on Sunday, Etoile Sahel will host Orlando Pirates from South Africa in the decisive second leg of the CAF Confederation Cup final. These two clubs drew 1-1 in the first leg. How are things looking, David?
Well, unfortunately, Sonny, the shadow of terror is going to hang over the second leg. It was originally scheduled for 18:30 GMT in Sousse, but because of the bombing in Tunis, which claimed 13 lives, the authorities have declared a state of emergency. There will be a nighttime curfew, and the match has now been brought forward to 1400 GMT. That's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Fortunately, Sonny, the weather, I don't think, will be a huge factor. But the South African team, Pirates, they must be kicking themselves because they were one up with just 3 minutes left of the first leg at the Orlando Stadium in Soweto. And then they basically fell asleep from a free kick. the ball broke loose in the goal mount, and Amar Jamal got the equaliser. He was the stand-in captain for Etoile Sahel, because their first-choice goalkeeper and captain, Ayman Matluti, was injured. Now, Jamal's an interesting character. He's a centre-back, but he is, in fact, the second-highest scorer for Etoile in the competition this season, with 4 goals. 2 less than the Algerian Bagdad Bounedjad, who was the lone striker in Soweto and was well pleased by the Pirates' defence. Pirates did well in the first half of the first leg, and Gabuza scored his 6th goal of the competition, which made him the joint leading scorer. Absolutely superb effort. He shielded the ball expertly and then unleashed a left-footed thunderbolt, which flew into the far corner of the net. But if the pendulum was swinging slightly in favour of Pirates ahead of the first leg, it undoubtedly is with Etoile now. I looked at the Etoile record, Sonny, in Sousse, in the CAF Confederations Cup. This is all matches in the Cup, qualifying, group, semi-finals, finals, etc. And it's pretty frightening if you're a visiting player. It's played 31, they've won 25, they've drawn 4, and they've lost just 2. They've scored 65 goals, that's an average of over 2 a game, and they've conceded just 20. So they're pretty stingy when it comes to giving goals away. The interesting thing, though, from a Pirates perspective, is Etoile du Sahel have featured in 2 Confederation Cup finals, and they have yet to win a match. In fact, all 4 games, home and away, in 2006 and also in 2008, ended in draws. Now, in 2006, it worked in favour of Etoile. They beat FAR Rabat of Morocco on the away goal rule. But it worked against Etoile in 2008 against fellow Tunisians Faxian. So that will offer a little bit of hope to Pirates. While my heart would love to see Pirates succeed, South Africa now have gone 14 years without a CAF title. That's an awful long time for a country that considers itself one of the powers of African football. My head tells me Etoile will win. But I think it's going to be narrow. I don't see it being a one-sided final, like unfortunately we had in the CAF Champions League, where TP Mazembe of DR Congo were far too good for USM Alger of Algeria. And if they succeed, Sonny, it'll be their 9th CAF title. It'll bring them level in second place with Zamalek of Egypt. And Etoile, as I've mentioned many times on the Sunny Side of Sport, have this unique record. They are the only club to have won all 5 African club competitions. That's the Champions League, Confederation Cup, Super Cup, and the 2 competitions which are now defunct, the African Cup Winners' Cup and the CAF Cup. All in all, a very successful club. But at the same time, their last CAF title was back in 2008 when they won the Super Cup. So for both Pirates and for Etoile, Sonny, there's a longing to end a long break without a trophy in Africa.
David, the Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations is holding its annual CECAFA Cup tournament. I believe it's Africa's oldest football competition, and they're holding it in Ethiopia. How about an update for our VOA football fans?
Yeah, good point, Sonny, about the oldest. In fact, you've got to go back to 1927. The name was different. It was known as the Gossage Cup then. It's had several name changes since. But that's when this competition actually began. And full credit to the gentlemen who run football in East and Central Africa. Despite all the problems in that region and some rather weak national teams, they managed to stage this competition every year. And this year it's the turn of Ethiopia. Let's look at the 3 groups, Danny. Each group has got 4 countries. Eritrea were the only member state that didn't take part. They've got political differences with Ethiopia, and they decided they weren't going to come to Addis Ababa. If we look first at Group A, the very first match was a big shock. Rwanda winning 1-0 against the host Ethiopia. Then no real surprise when Tanzania beat Somalia 4-0. Then Tanzania beat Rwanda 2-1, and in the very latest results, Ethiopia got back into contention with a 2-0 win over Somalia. So the remaining 2 fixtures there will be Rwanda against Somalia and Tanzania against Ethiopia. And for Ethiopia, the hosts, that's a must-win match. I think one thing the organizers do not want to happen is that the host nation, Ethiopia, are eliminated before we even get to the knockout stage. returning, Sonny, to Group B. It's Burundi 1, Zanzibar 0. And then another big surprise, Uganda, fresh from their World Cup double over Togo, were beaten 2-0 by Kenya. And in the following matches, Uganda beat Zanzibar 4-0. And in the very latest result, it's Kenya 1, Burundi 1. So all to play for in Group B. In Group C, South Sudan started with a 2-0 win over Djibouti, who unfortunately are officially, according to the FIFA rankings, the worst national team in the world. And in the other match, Malawi beat Sudan 2-1. On to the second series of matches, Malawi beating Djibouti 3-0. And then in the first ever meeting between South Sudan and Sudan, a goalless draw. So South Sudan, Sonny, will be very pleased with their results so far, a victory and a draw. And they're looking good to make it to the quarterfinals. What happens is the top two sides in each of the three groups qualify, plus there's two best third-place countries. So, in other words, eight of the 12 competitors will go through to the quarterfinal stage. So, all to play for all of these teams. And it's really nice. South Sudan, the babes of African football, the country only became independent in 2011. The national team played its first match in 2012. And now here they are doing really well with the 4 points from the first two matches.
David, we now know the dates for the World Cup draw for Africa, in which 20 teams will be divided into five groups of four each. Break out your calendar for us, David.
Yes, Sonny, it's June the 24th. It's going to be held at the CAF headquarters in Cairo. Just a reminder of those 20 teams that have qualified. In alphabetical order, you've got Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cape Verde, you've got Congo, Brazzaville, Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt, Gabon, Ghana, Guinea, Libya, Mali, Morocco, Nigeria, South Africa, Uganda, you've got the Democratic Republic of Congo, Senegal, Tunisia, and Zambia. And just a reminder to all our Voice of America listeners, you've got those 20 countries, probably, Sonny, on the basis of the FIFA rankings, although that has not been officially confirmed, will be put into four pots. And from those four pots, one team will be pulled out from each. So you'll have five groups of four. Each country will play its three opponents at home and away. So it's a total of six matches. And the five group winners, they are the five countries that will represent Africa at the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Now, it's going to be quite a drawn-out process because if you look at the match days, there'll be one in October 2016 and one in November 2016, and then on to 2017, you'll have one in August, September, October, and November. And when you consider, Sonny, that a couple of months ago it all began with those first-round qualifiers, cheapest. That's it's quite a drawn-out process, and of course, form can change over time. And the other interesting thing about the draw is being held in June, that means that those two rounds of Cup of Nations matches next March, they'll be held over a period of 9 days, they now become crucial in terms of the rankings. So let's use South Africa as an example. At the moment, they would be in the bottom pot. They would be amongst the lowest seeds and at the greatest risk of getting a very difficult draw. I mean, I looked at a worst-case scenario for South Africa. I mean, they could be drawn with the likes of Ivory Coast, Tunisia, and Nigeria. I don't think that's a draw that the South Africans particularly want. But now they're going to play Cameroon home and away in March. If, and it's a big if, they were to win those two matches, there's a chance, I mean, they could sneak up to the third pot, and that would certainly boost their chances of getting a good draw. Some countries, you know, your Ivory Coast, your Ghanas, etc., they don't really mind. They feel they're strong enough to qualify no matter who they meet. But for other countries, South Africa definitely included, the luck of the draw, I believe, is going to be absolutely critical as to their chances of making it to Russia or not. The big date, though, Sonny, June 24 in Cairo, that's when the draw will be made, and then all the debates and discussions begin as to who's likely to represent Africa in Russia.
David, a veteran French coach, says he's embarking on a new adventure after taking Congo Brazzaville to that 2016 World Cup draw. How about some details on this adventurous coach?
Yes, Sonny, Claude Leroy. He's always in the news. He's been in Africa now for 30 years, more or less. He had a brief spell in the Middle East. But it's in his DNA, Sonny, Africa. I think he just had to come back. He was in Oman and then Syria for a short while. And he's got this amazing record. Every country he's taken to the Cup of Nations tournament finals, apart from DR Congo in 2013, has at least reached the quarterfinals. And also, he has got gold, silver, bronze, and fourth-place finishes. So, all in all, a man who's done very well. Now, since 2013, he's been in charge of Congo Brazzaville, and you can see the effect. He's made them into a top-10-ranked team in Africa, and that's a big improvement on for the Red Devils from just a few years ago. As you rightly pointed out, they're among those 20 countries who go into the World Cup group draw. And they did very well in the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations. They qualified for the quarterfinals. They were two up against their neighbors, DR Congo. And then, unfortunately, they imploded. And eventually, they lost by 4-2. But Leroy, a 67-year-old, he's got this mop of blonde hair. He always wears these round glasses, very professorial look altogether. And he's got this fondness for dark jackets and dark T-shirt. He's going to be sorely missed, I believe, by Congo Brazzaville. He's done an excellent job. Now, the question, of course, Sonny, is where to next for him? Well, he professed in an interview a few months ago that his dream climax to his coaching career in Africa would be to handle Cameroon at the 2019 Cup of Nations, which the Central African country are going to host. Now, at the moment, you've got Volker Fink. He's gone, the German coach. He left a month ago. And you've got Alexandra Belinga, a local coach. He's in temporary charge. And the hints in the media, Sonny, are that Leroy is heading for Yaoundé to take charge of the Indomitable Alliance. That's something we'll watch with great interest. Interestingly, way back in 1988, he led Cameroon to the Cup of Nations title in Morocco. They beat Nigeria 1-0 in the final.
David, this week, millions of Americans celebrating the annual Thanksgiving holiday in which they count a few blessings and eat a little bit of Tom Turkey. In terms of African football, David, what are you thankful for in 2015?
I see two young talents emerging, Sonny, in 2015. Two names to watch out for. The first one is Farouk Mia. He's a midfielder. He plays for the Ugandan champions, and they got this really dangerous name. They're known as the Vipers, so they're going to sting everybody in the CAF Champions League next year. In his latest match for the Ugandan national team, he scored a brace. Now, the thing about him, Sonny, he's only 17 years of age, and he's banging in the goals for the Ugandan Cranes. And Uganda, another one of those countries, are going to be in that group draw next June in Cairo. And I think for the future opponents of Uganda, the name Farouk Mia is one to watch. What I like about him, this guy, Sonny, he doesn't mess around. He gets half a sight of goal, and he just lets loose with that right foot of his, and clearly one to watch. He's a blessing for Ugandan football in particular, but I believe also for African football. The other player I feel that's done very well is Victor Osimhen. As mentioned, he's the Nigerian striker. He scored a record 10 goals in the World Under-17 Championship in Chile. He was instrumental in Nigeria retaining the title. And it's going to be very interesting to see how he shapes up now at the Olympic Games qualifying tournament. He's only 16 years of age, so obviously there's going to be the question mark about, has he got the physicality to compete against players who could be up to 6 years older than him? My hunch is that he's got that goal instinct. He's got that predatory instinct. And given the chance, he may well surprise a lot of people and show that what he can do at under 17 level, he can also do at under 23 level. But make no mistake, it's going to be quite a challenge for him competing against players just that bit older than him.
That was our football guru, David Legg. He spoke with my colleague, Sene Young, from Johannesburg, South Africa. And that wraps up another expanded edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Douglas Simpoka. Sunny Young will be back next week. Have a great weekend, sports fans.